So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least we got the fuck ups out of the way early. Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine-clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I am the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
And one of the things that you talk about when it comes to the podcast, or recording the podcast, I should say, is all the extra mouse clicks that Google has implemented in just trying to get to record the goddamn thing. As you did right before this show, which is
yes.
What prompted this, there was an update for my Pixel, and you have a Pixel too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you've probably gotten this, but I don't know how much you use Bluetooth on it. But before this update, all I had to do, you know, was pull the shade down, click on Bluetooth, and be done with it. Now I have to pull it down. I click on it. A pop-up comes up, and I have to swipe this, you know, little thing to the right to activate Bluetooth. Then I have to hit OK. What the fuck is the point of doing that?
I don't know, man. These devices are supposed to make our lives easier, right? Simpler.
The first time I had to do that, which was just a couple of days ago, I'm like, God damn it, Google, do you have to fuck everything up?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I mean, because honestly, I can't think of a reason why I would have to do that now. It makes absolutely zero sense to me. But of course, I'm not a highly paid software programmer working for Google. So, you know, I'm not privy to the machinations of their thought process.
Well, I might be able to give you a little insight, because even at my own company, you know, we're a tech company. And most of my career, I sort of sat in the middle where I was like a business analyst, where I would talk to users and get and discuss with them what they thought they needed. And then on the technical side, kind of help develop the solution, you know? But a lot of times engineers, especially at big tech companies, work sort of in a vacuum, and they think about a thing like from an engineering standpoint and not from a user standpoint. You know, it's like, I'm a technical guy and my brain works this way. So if I were going to do this, here's how I would do it. Not thinking that there are going to be just millions of ordinary folks out there that just want a device that is simple to use, you know?
Yeah.
So that's usually the problem. Like even in my company, they'll say, hey, Todd, can you QA this new software feature? And I'm like, Who the hell did this? You know, like, why would you think of burying this option under like three layers of menus? Like, why is it not on the home screen? Well, and I'm like, yeah, but the users are not going to care about any of that. You yeah. know, like, they just want to know, oh, there it is. There's where I put my, I don't know, whatever value you need to put, doesn't matter. But yeah, so that, I mean, I realize it probably doesn't help you in any way, shape, or form, but just a little insight as to why things happen that way, you know?
I'm looking at it now, and so I tap Bluetooth, you know, I swipe the little button to the right, and it automatically brings up the most used Bluetooth devices. Whereas before you just hit the Bluetooth, you didn't have a choice. It just connected to the most recent one. So I think maybe that's part of it in case it's not the device that you want to connect Bluetooth to. So, I mean, I understand that. But Jesus, do I have to click done too?
Exactly. Exactly.
First world problems. There are people wondering if they're going to have enough to eat tonight, and I'm worrying about a fucking Bluetooth.
Well, tag. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's that.
But I have my priorities straight, goddammit.
100%.
Jesus. That's really all I had to bitch about today.
Well, I mean, I have plenty to bitch about. You know, it's people are going to people, you know, so just in that department. So, you know, one of the big conventions here in the Northeast is Monster Mania. It's a huge convention. It's been going on twice, 2-3 times a year for 20 years. They always have great guests, you know. It's the one where I met John Cleese earlier this month.
Okay.
So for their August show, they announced the three names so far are William Shatner, Robert Englund, and Clive Barker.
Ooh.
Now, Clive has announced that this will be his final convention circuit. He can't handle it health-wise anymore. And he wants to just focus on writing and artwork for his remaining days. Fair enough. So the point is, it's going to be madness, right? Now, Monster Mania sells VIP tickets. And VIP tickets allow certain privileges, like you get into the vendor room an hour before everyone else each day. And it also gives you a one line skip so that for one of the featured guests, you can go almost like fast pass at an amusement park. You know, you can go to a certain special line. So you are virtually guaranteed to get your autograph and your photo op. They have been doing this for time immemorial. I've used VIP before, you know, and it's great, but they sell a very limited number of them because otherwise there would be nothing special about it. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly.
So the passes went on sale. It doesn't really matter. Let's say it was Monday night or Tuesday night of this week at 7 p.m. Tickets went on sale for August Monster Mania, including VIP. Well, they sold out very quickly. And man, people are acting like it is Russia just launched their nukes and you have 37 minutes to get your affairs in order and make peace with your God, you know, and the vitriol, like it's one thing to be disappointed, like, oh man, I wanted to get VIP and I couldn't, you know, but the way like they're attacking the convention and they're just going, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Scott, I am so happy that my emotional health doesn't depend on whether or not I'm going to be able to stand in line and fork over several hundred dollars to meet a celebrity. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, but just the nasty shit. And Monster Mania is a good show, right? They have their, you know, their occasional hiccups or whatever, like any event does. But the guys that run it do a bang up job managing a very busy, very crowded event. And it just, where am I going with this? You may ask, dear listener, just another example of how people suck, you know?
Yeah.
And now they posted an announcement that Clive Barker himself has requested that when people meet him, that they wear a mask. As we all know, Clive had some very serious health issues. He almost died. He is prone to infections. So he has asked people to wear a mask when they meet him. Well, again, people are acting as if Clive Barker said, if you want an autograph, it's going to cost you a fucking kidney. You know, we're going to do the surgery right here and you're going to remove a kidney and you're going to give it to me.
Yeah.
People are like, here we fucking go again. And I'm like, no, 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 no. The government didn't tell you to wear a mask. Monster Mania didn't tell you to wear a mask. An older man with significant health issues has asked his fans to wear a mask when they meet him because he has concerns about respiratory illness. And people are just being shitty. Does it fucking matter whether or not I believe that masks work or don't work or whatever? I want to meet Clive Barker. He asked me to wear a mask. Guess what, Scott? I'm going to fucking wear a mask when I meet him.
Exactly.
That's it. That's it. Such a simple thing. And people are just losing their minds over it. And it reminds me of just why I hate people.
Yep. You know?
I just don't get it. Why does anyone care at this point? I don't know how it is over where you live, but here in my town, occasionally I will see a person in the supermarket or something or at a store with wearing a mask. It's usually an older person, and I don't even give it a second thought. What the fuck do I care? You know what I mean? Like, I don't, you know, I don't understand people, Scott, and I don't think I ever will.
No, I see it occasionally. On the bus, I'll see, that's where it's, I see it most is when I'm going to work. People, and, you know, rightfully so, given the nature of people who tend to take public transportation.
Right, yeah. I'm surprised you don't wear a hazmat suit.
Full body condom is what I need. And I'll see it at work, too. Because as I've mentioned, 80% of our employees have some form of disability. So I see a lot of masks at work. But I don't think anything about it, you know. And we've got a dispenser of masks, you know, in the foyer of the office that I work in. And, you know, it gets filled up because people take them and use them as they, you know, they should if they feel the need to. And there's absolutely no big fucking deal about it. Yeah. And I don't understand why people get so pissed off at what other people choose to do for themselves. You know, if I want to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. It's none of your fucking business why I'm wearing it or if I'm wearing it. You know, just tend to your own sheep. You know, mind your business.
Right. Right. And right. Again, and it's just, look, man, people just want to be heard. They want to feel important. And like, and in this case, I just found it really, really weird because it was Clive himself who requested it, not the convention, not the hotel, not the county or whatever. Just like I said, an old man with health problems asked, could you please wear a mask when, you know, when you come up in my line to meet me? He's going to be exposed to thousands of people that weekend.
Yeah.
And dude, let's say it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't work. If it makes him feel better, isn't that enough?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
You know, and listen, man, I'm going to try again to get a couple of more books signed, but I met him a few years back down in Texas, and he signed my Hellraiser poster and my hardcover of Imagica. So I'm good, you know, but I wouldn't mind meeting him again and getting a couple of more things signed, especially since he's pretty reasonable as far as autographs go. I was prepared when I met him to spend $100 per autograph, and he was only charging 60, which included the selfie. So
wow.
Yeah. So that was pretty good, you know. So I'll probably get several things signed by him, you know, particularly books. I like hardcover books, and I have most of Clive's novels in hardcover. So that's that. Just thought I'd mention it because I thought it was weird.
No, it is weird, and unfortunately, it's not surprising.
No,
you know, people just want to complain about everything.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to complain about M. Emmett Walsh starring. God damn it!
Yes.
Because I thought he died about 15 years ago.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
Because my first reaction when that popped up on my feed was, is this an old post? I mean, I just started this account. How am I getting old posts like this? But
right.
No, he just died, you know, a day or two ago. And I'm like, son of a bitch. Because, I mean, he looked ancient, you know, back in the 80s.
Right. 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 And dude, like he just, like you and I both thought he was dead, and yet he just, like, he did a movie this year.
Did he really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like the movie came out, some movie called Outlaw Posse came out this year, but so he probably filmed it last year. But the point being, like, he was actively working. Like he did three movies in 2022. So, like, he was still actively working, and yet you and I both thought he had passed.
Yeah, and he's 88, or, well, not anymore, but, you know,
yeah.
he was 88 when he died, 3 days before his 89th birthday.
Yeah, I remember him most. I mean, when I heard he passed, the first thing I thought of is he was in A Time to Kill. And I clearly remember him from that. And then I went back and I checked his filmography and I'm like, holy shit. Like he was in 1,000 fucking movies. And yeah. He's one of them guys. Like you look at him and you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just a sample of what he was in. Cause I think he has like 200 credits to his name.
Something, you know, like that.
Blood Simple, Blade Runner, Knives Out, The Jerk, which is what I think of when I first thought of when I heard he died. He's after those cans.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, Back to School, Missing in Action, Slapshot, the original Slapshot, Critters, Straight Time, Blade Runner. I think I said that.
Mm.
Wild Wild West, Clean and Sober, Ordinary People, Brubaker, Criminal Hearts. I mean, just he's in movies I didn't even know he was in.
Right?
You know, like Blade Runner. I had no idea he was in that. Although, to be fair, I've only seen Blade Runner once, and that was not long after it came out on video cassette, which shows you how long ago that was. back when you had to hand crank it to get it going, you right. know? but yeah, he's just one of those dependable actors. But man, he was so funny in The Jerk as the would-be assassin trying to kill Steve Martin and then turning into the private detective.
Yeah.
Oh, just thinking about that makes me laugh. Christmas with the Cranks.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, just a fantastic all around character actor.
Yeah, and even in TV he was in 1,000 things.
Yeah, he played who was it? I think it was Home Improvement, and he played Tim Allen's father-in-law. He played somebody's father-in-law.
Yes, I know he was on Home Improvement. Let's see, he played Colonel Fred Patterson on two episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, that was his father-in-law.
Okay. Yeah.
That he played.
That's right. He was in an episode of The X-Files. I remember that because I just rewatched The X-Files. And he was in 3 seasons of Pound Puppies. My daughter loved that when she was little. But yeah. As a voice actor, he did a bunch of episodes of Pound Puppies.
234 acting credits.
Wow.
that's, you know, that's a good run. You know, most actors would kill just to have, you know, a quarter of those credits.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's,
all right. Well, RIP.
Yeah.
I it took a second. Like, I didn't even remember that that was his name. Like, when I read, I just saw like a headline, M. Emmett Walsh, and I'm like, who the fuck's that? And then I saw the picture, and I'm like, oh, okay, that dude.
Yeah, he's one of those few character actors whose name I knew and was able to put his face to it immediately. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because I just saw him in something recently. I can't remember what it was I watched that had him in it. But he was fresh on my mind somewhat. So that's probably the only reason why I remembered, because I can't seem to remember anything else anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, that's okay for a man of your advanced years. It's to be expected.
It is. It really is.
Oh, boy.
That's what my doctor said, because I mentioned it to him. I had that doctor's appointment yesterday morning. And he's like, well, and now my doctor is no spring chicken either. He's in his late 60s, at least. He kind of acts that way too, but he's a really nice guy and I like him. But he was asking me if I had any concerns or issues, and I'm like, well, the only thing really aside from my hearing would be, forgetting things. And he's like, well, can you give me an example? And so I gave him an example of something that just happened. And it was a word. It's a word I use every day at work. And it's passport acceptance facility, which is, you know, the things when you go to the post office, that's what they call the passport acceptance facility. And I was trying to say that to a customer, and this happens a lot. And the phrase just would not come. It's one of those things that doesn't matter how often you use something. Sometimes you just forget it, you know, kind of like my sex life. So I'm explaining that to him, and he just, that's just being old.
Wow. You know? That's funny.
And I'm like, well, gee, thanks, Doc. I appreciate that. And just as an aside, his name is Lee, Dr. Lee. Lee is his last name, and he's new doctor. I got him, you know, when I got the new insurance in January, and here's how hyper-focused I am and how backwards thinking I can be sometimes. I assume because his last name was Lee, he was Asian. Well, he's not. He just happens to have the name Lee.
Huh.
Yeah. But, maybe it's just me, but if you see somebody named Dr. Lee, you kind of assume that they're Asian.
To be fair, yeah, I probably would have thought that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just saying.
Yeah. But he's a nice guy. All right. So, very sad about M. Emmett Walsh, but 88 years, 234 acting credits. That's a damn good run. By anyone's account. So, all right. So, do you want to talk about the trailers first?
Yeah, we could. There were a couple of big ones that came out checked out yesterday. Saw the trailer. I guess instead of Beetlejuice 2, they're calling it Beetlejuice, which, okay. But it's just a teaser, you know, and it just shows like Lydia Deetz and her mother. And Jenna Ortega, I guess, plays Lydia's daughter. And it's just, it shows like them in the town. And then it shows the model, like Jenna Ortega discovers the model that in the attic, you know, and then like some supernatural stuff happens. And then you see like the Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, you know, and then at the end, you just see a close up of his face. So I am intrigued now. When they first announced years ago that there would be a sequel to Beetlejuice, I I was one of the people who was like, eh, is the world like really clamoring for this? Can you really catch lightning in a bottle twice? You know? But now that they made it, I'm intrigued. I'll go see it. You know? I liked it. I'm curious to see what they do as the follow-up, you know? So it looked pretty cool. I don't know if you saw it.
Yes, I did. I actually saw that last night. And then when you mentioned the second trailer, I watched that right before we started recording.
All right. So what did you think?
I'm intrigued. I really thought he was going to say it's showtime.
Me too.
You know, and the juice is loose, just doesn't have the same. Because I'm like, what, is O.J. Simpson out there killing people again? What's
yeah,
going
right?
on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I hear you.
But I like Michael Keaton, and I think it's really kind of cool that he has, you know, redone his two most iconic characters in the last 2-3 years. You know, he was Batman again, yep. and Beetlejuice, which are really the two movies that people know him for the most.
100%.
You know, ask somebody, you know, what other movie he's been in. They might say Mr. Mom. They remember
right.
back that far.
Dude, for me, it's Johnny Dangerously.
Yeah. Which
God, I love that movie.
I was not a big fan of that movie, because I don't like Joe Piscopo.
All right. No, I know you don't. We've talked about that before. I know you don't like Joe Piscopo. So, okay. So, but real quick, speaking of Michael Keaton and Batman, that was one of my favorite segments from the Oscars was
Danny DeVito
and Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, calling out, you know, Michael Keaton and in his face, like the look on his face in the audience. That was great. That was a good Oscar moment right there.
Hands down, that is an Oscar moment that's going to be remembered for a very long time.
And of course, you had like dickbags like online, like live tweeting, like, yeah, let's not forget that Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't, as Mr. Freeze, didn't face Michael Keaton's Batman. I'm like, oh, shut up. Do you have to suck all the fun out of the room? Like, we know that. We know that. But it was still fun, right? You know, it was still fun. Like, Jesus Christ. Now we know why nerds get beat up.
You know what I mean? I would love to go, you know, postal at a nerd convention somewhere sometime.
Yeah, it's like
only if it's filled with assholes like that who just feel the need to, as you said, suck the air out of a room and point out the most obvious and meaningless bit of trivia.
Exactly. It's like, you know, we fucking know. And then, you know, like I would counter with, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like Batman is still Batman. Like Batman as a character has fought both Mr. Freeze and the Penguin. Like that's the point, dumbass. But anywho.
Yeah. On a similar vein of that, they have chosen a new James Bond, and I don't remember what his name is. And he looks like he could be a good James Bond. I don't know anything about him. I don't remember seeing him in anything of note. So I think it's kind of cool that they're going with what I would consider a relative unknown. But there are people who are absolutely livid that they chose another James Bond. Oh, it's a smack in the face to Daniel Craig and James Bond. You know, he died in the last movie, and they should just respect that, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, it's a fictional fucking character.
Exactly.
You know, if it was based on a real person, you know, if they were doing a movie about Abraham Lincoln, and then in a sequel you see him coming back after the gunshot, yeah, that would be, you know, a little off.
Yeah, it would be a little weird.
Or if somehow JFK recovered from half his head missing, you know, I would understand. But, you know, James,
there's something wrong with you.
Tell me something I don't know.
Okay, fair, duh. That was kind of, an obvious statement. All right.
but with James Bond, I mean, give me a fucking break. You know, is that really a hill that you want to die on? I mean, not only that, is it a hill you want to climb up? I mean, how sad is your life that you feel that you need to get this worked up over a fictional character?
Dude, happens all the time. Like I knew, you know me, I'm a James Bond fanatic, and I knew that they were going to kill off the Daniel Craig James Bond. I knew it was coming. There were leaks, you know, I knew it. And when I saw it in the theater, I already knew, well, they're going to recast and they're going to start over again and tell a new story, just like they did with the Daniel Craig version. You know, they focused in Casino Royale, like on his backstory and how he started, you know, and became a 00, you know, dude, please.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. People are silly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So the aliens,
Alien Romulus.
All right. What did you think of it?
I dig it in the sense that it looks like it's going back to its roots, like claustrophobic setting, people fighting the xenomorphs. The only thing, and I might take some heat for this, but it looks like it's the old tough girl boss, you know, scenario from the original Alien. And however, having said that, I just hope that it's just a teaser and it will be a little more than that instead of just a retread of Ellen Ripley in Alien, you know? That's all. But it looked good. Like, again, claustrophobia, violence, you know? Again, I'll see it. I just got weary of, like, the bullshit sequel, you know, Prometheus and Alien Covenant, like all of that weird shit with the engineers and all that. I don't want to have to think that hard, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see, you know, again, it's just a teaser. It's what, 40 seconds of footage. So, but then of course they show, like, at the very end of the teaser, the doors open and there's some girl with dirt on her face with a gun, you know? And I'm like, oh, well, that looks hauntingly familiar.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that was my initial reaction too, was, well, this just looks like a rehash of the original. And considering that the guy who directing it did the remake of Evil Dead, there's every conceivable possibility that that's just exactly what it is, just a rehash. But I'm intrigued. I like seeing the facehuggers. I like seeing that group of facehuggers coming out of the doorway into the hall chasing after someone.
Yes.
Because the facehuggers are fucking creepy.
They are.
I hate them. It's one of the reasons I could never finish Half-Life, the video game Half-Life.
Oh, yes.
Because they've got a similar thing to the facehugger in that as well. And they just give me the goddamn creeps.
I agree.
So, but, you know, I'll withhold my judgment on it until I either see it or I hear what other people are saying about it, because then I'll judge it by what other people see, as everybody else does on the internet. Who needs to see something when you can have an opinion on it blindly?
Oh, well, dude, look at the, you know, and again, it might be a function of my friends list, but look at the hatred over the new Crow movie that's being spewed, right? And first of all, everybody's calling it a remake. It's not a remake of the Brandon Lee version of The Crow. It's a new movie based on the, I want to say it's like The Crow Salvation, something like that. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. So it's a new version. It's not a remake of the original. So have some fucking basis in reality. If you're going to, oh, hold on. I have it here. I have a picture of it. The Crow Wild Justice. And the cover, even the image of the character on the cover looks like the you know, the Skarsgård, Bill Skarsgård version that has been in the trailer, you know. So it's not even a remake, so they can't even get their hatred right, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And again, like any movie, it'll either be good or it won't. And I always take heat for this, but I don't think the original The Crow is as great as everyone seems to think it is.
No, it's not. And I was going to say that because right? I saw that, I want to say within the last year or so. And one, it hasn't aged all that well. And number two, the only reason people liked The Crow was because of Brandon Lee and parts of the story. It's just, it's probably one of the most overrated, iconic movies that we have. There, I said it, fight me. You know, did I enjoy it? Yeah, absolutely enjoyed it. But it's not a great movie, and it certainly does not deserve the iconic status that it has. Regardless of Brandon Lee's performance or what happened to him during the shooting of the movie. Well, no pun intended.
Right.
You know. But I'm excited to see the new one. I love Bill Skarsgård. Loved him as Pennywise. I think he'll make an excellent Eric Craven. And I'm just, I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, and then, so like, Alex Proyas, the director of the original, you know, came out and shared his thoughts in a on his Facebook page, I guess, and went on and on about how it's a disservice to Brandon Lee and blah 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 blah. And he, like, let me just say, of course, he has every right to his opinion. You know, I don't care about that, but at the same time, he doesn't own the intellectual property, you know?
No.
So you made your movie. Be happy about that. Be happy and honored that a lot of people do love it and respect it. But you don't own the property. And the studio is making a new movie based on a different storyline and, you know, from a comic. And there we are. And that's it. And again, Scott, I'll just say it again. When it comes to these type of things, it's the easiest fucking problem to solve. If you're that bent, don't go see it. Speak with your wallet. Don't watch it in the theater. Don't stream it. It's really that simple, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, can the man who gave us I, Robot and Gods of Egypt have much room to talk?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, having said that, I'm taking him to task for that stupid comment. He made one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made, in my opinion, Dark City.
Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah, I love that movie.
Absolutely fantastic movie. One of my favorite of that specific genre. So I can forgive him for anything. But really, he hasn't done anything worth of note since The Crow, and that was 1994. Name one movie he's made since then.
I have no idea.
Aside from Gods of Egypt, which I mentioned, which was 2016. But exactly, that's my point. You know, it was this, in this case, it was the source material and not him. You know, so just get off it, Alex Proyas.
Exactly.
You know, when Christopher Lee died and Bela Lugosi died, they didn't stop making Dracula movies out of respect for them.
Right? Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, whatever. I don't really care, like, one way or the other what he has to say. But like anything else, like, that article got, you know, that post got shared all over the place. And I think people were posting it as, like, a justification to say, like, see, even the original director agrees with me. Like, dickhead, the original director doesn't fucking know who you are. Right. So, you know, like, stop it. You know, just stop it. It's like, again, nobody cares. See it, don't see it. Doesn't matter. Nobody cares. and I'm going on record, Scott, and this will be recorded and posted for all posterity when this episode goes live. I am predicting that it'll be the number one fucking movie the weekend that it comes out.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So even if people go just so they can hate watch it.
Yeah.
As I predicted, the Crow remake sucks. Oh, noted. Anyway.
The Crow has no wings.
Right? Oh, right.
There's going to be that headline.
Absolutely.
Mark my words.
Absolutely. You're 100% right, Scott. 100%.
But it's still a clever line because I thought of it.
Yes. The Crow's wings were clipped at the box office.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, shoot me now.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're finally going to talk about Dune 2.
Yes.
Because I finally saw it. Yeah, I saw it before you in this strange turn of events because usually you're the first one to see. Because I don't go to the theaters a lot much anymore. But I did for Dune 2. And as I said when I mentioned it briefly a week or two ago, I fucking love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's better in all ways than the first part. And I love the first part, and I'm not taking digs at the first part. They just took what was great and embellished it. There are certainly differences from the book to the movie that I remember, okay? Specifically, the way they kill the rest of the Atreides house and the Colosseum, which I thought was fucking brilliant. I loved that. I thought that was a really good change. But then I thought, there's these three guys they've had prisoner. How much of a challenge is it going to be for Faye to kill these people?
But that was the whole point because, right? So the Baron, two of them were drugged, but the third one wasn't, and Baron Harkonnen did that on purpose.
Yeah.
To make, so it really was just a show. Except for that, which I thought was cool. And it's just like how fucked up the Harkonnens actually are, no, dude, I agree with you 100%. I loved it. I am a fan because I'll be honest, I was very burnt out on like superhero movies and Marvel movies and such. So it's good to see big sci-fi spectacle with world building and intrigue. Giant spaceships landing on planets, and dude, just from a filmmaking, like a movie magic standpoint, when Paul Atreides rides the sandworm for the first time, I looked at my brother and I said, how the fuck did they do that? How the hell did they do that? I swear to God, they actually found some giant fucking sandworms out in the Sahara Desert, and they did that shit for real.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that, man, just from a movie magic standpoint, it was awesome.
It was. But the thing is, you don't actually even really see the sandworm when he does that.
Right.
And which I think is brilliant. And I saw a thing about how they did that, which really kind of took the excitement out of that scene.
Well, that's why I won't watch. Sometimes I refuse to watch behind the scenes stuff
because
I don't want to know. Like watching like how a magician does the trick. And then you're like, really? Like that was it?
No, I will always want to know how a magician does something.
Yeah, see, that's where you and I are different. That's why I'm right and you're wrong.
I always want to know how that happens. And I didn't actually search out, well, how did they do that scene? It just happened to come up in my Instagram feed in one of the movie channels that I subscribe to on it. And Timothy Chalamet was talking about it and what he was doing when they were filming that screen, that scene, which I'm not going to share because I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody else.
I appreciate that.
But it's such a beautifully shot movie. You know, and I know I mentioned this to you in messages on Facebook, but the first battle scene and the bodies that are falling down around Paul Atreides and his mother, I just thought that there was something so beautiful about that scene, the way they felt, because it wasn't something I'd actually ever really seen before in a movie that I can remember. I mean, you see bodies flying and falling and stuff, but not coming down like it's raining, you know, and I loved that.
Yeah, it was very cool, you know, just so many great things about it. The one change that was very noticeable to me, both from the book and from the David Lynch version, was how the we never see the sister, you know, as a child, you know, and Denis Villeneuve talks about that. He said he just felt that the way his movie is shot and directed, it would have been weird, like having a fully developed toddler walking around speaking and, you know, and doing things and such, you know, because if you think about the Lynch version, it is a little weird. Like when you see the little girl, you know, so I thought it was pretty cool how they did it with where she is still in utero, but can communicate with her mother that way. I thought that was very clever to do it that way.
Not to be one of those guys that we just bitched about a few minutes ago, but we actually do see her fully grown.
Oh, and yeah. In a vision of the future.
In a vision of the future.
I just meant as we don't see her as like a 3-year-old, you know? Yeah. No, yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. So, which I thought was pretty cool.
There's two points. One, I don't remember if she was like this in the book, but Lady Jessica, she seemed far more conniving in the movie than I remember her being in the book or even the Lynch version. I mean, she actually seemed like the ultimate stage mother.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And it's been a long time since I read the book, you know, so I'll be honest. I don't remember everything. Like certain big beats, like the sister was very noticeable, you know, and spoiler alert, jump forward like 20 seconds. In the book, it's actually the sister that kills Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I thought it was in the movie, the way it happens, I thought was actually better.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, because it kind of brings Paul's revenge cycle full circle, you know?
I think all of the changes, except the one I'm about to mention, are better. And the one I'm about to mention is the difference in Chani's character.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't remember how this happened in the books. I know that this didn't happen the same way in Lynch's version of Dune. But the animosity that is between them and how she rides off alone. I mean, I know he wants to do a third version, a third Dune movie based on Dune Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that if I ever read that or not, but it all it seems almost like, you know, the next movie should be Chani versus Paul. That's what the setup of the ending is like for me. And I don't remember that at all from the book.
Yeah, so those are the only two books that I read were Dune and Dune Messiah. I didn't read any of the remaining original Herbert books or any. I didn't realize. I knew his son had written a couple of books, but I didn't know that there's 23 Dune books altogether.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I learned that very recently that there were that many, you know.
And they're all fairly shitty from what I heard.
Yeah, I did hear that. Because the reason I even found out is because an article came up in my discoveries, you know, on Chrome. All 23 Dune books in chronological order. And I'm like, wait, what? You know, like there's 23 Dune books. But anyway, you're 100% right. In the original Dune and the like the first half of Dune Messiah, Chani stays with Paul no matter what. Like even when he weds Princess Irulan out of political convenience and everything, she stays by his side. And even in the first, in the beginning of Dune Messiah, until things start to go south. So it's going to be very interesting. I didn't really mind that change. I think that the fact that they gave Chani's character more agency in this movie, I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it fit into the narrative. You know, I didn't really have a problem. A lot of guys were like bitching about it. Like, here we go again with the strong female character. And I'm like, no, but Paul is still the focus of the story. You know, it's just how she relates to him. I didn't really have any problem with it.
Yeah, I didn't either, honestly. I guess maybe I'm slightly ambivalent about it, but it certainly adds a greater degree of drama to the story. So yep. In that respect, you know, it's a huge win because it really does, it does create a good conflict and a great setup for another movie. So it took, I think, almost an hour or a little over an hour before we even see Fade Rautha in the movie. And to be honest, I was getting a little impatient because I really wanted to see him. And I'm going to tell you this. Austin Butler owns that fucking screen every time he's
100%.
On it.
Dude, I agree 100%.
You can't not look at him. And even under all that makeup, he's still one of the most fuckable men in the world. Don't know what it is.
Okay, then.
and that's in a movie with Timothy Chalamet. Okay. So I know if I look up Fade Paul Atreides porn, there's going to be some hentai about that somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. There's fanfic about there all out there, I'm sure, already.
Which I'm going to look at as soon as we're done.
No, man, he was very, very good in that role. I actually wish that the fight between him and Paul had gone on a little bit longer. But I get it. Like, I get it. You don't want to, like, make it completely ridiculous. You know, I thought it was good, and I thought it was good that Paul doesn't, like, easily overpower him, you know?
Yeah.
So I was a little, look, we all know like the David Lynch version is what it is, right? But I almost like the way that Baron Harkonnen dies in that version better, you know? Like,
the heart plug pulled out.
The heart plug gets pulled and everything. Like, I just thought that was pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's still kind of my favorite death.
But I also like this version of Baron Harkonnen, just this big, obese, you know, blob of a man, you know.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very creative choice. So
now,
did
you see the miniseries doing that was on the Sci-Fi Network?
I did not.
No, I didn't. I did. I've actually got that on DVD.
Oh, okay.
And I like that a lot. It's much more of a closer match to the book than either of the movies. But it's very well done. And the only thing that I wish the fight in this movie had that the miniseries had was they were fighting basically in their underwear. Yeah. So I could have gotten behind that if they just all stripped down and greased themselves up and went at it. I thought that would have been a more appropriate way to do that scene.
Fair enough. Okay, so here it is, Frank Herbert's Dune, 3-part mini. Now, I knew it existed. I just have never seen it. I'm trying to see, like, where it doesn't seem like it streams anywhere.
It was directed by the guy who played the Crypt Keeper.
Really?
Yeah, or who created the Crypt Keeper. The composer for Creepshow, excuse me. Well, you've got it open there. You can tell me the director.
Yeah, let's see. It's Frank Herbert's Dune. Directed by John Harrison.
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't say, like, it looks like it only exists. It was on Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah, it looks like it only exists on DVD. I'll have to get it on DVD if I want to watch it. It doesn't look like it streams anywhere.
Yeah, it's well worth getting. It is hard to find. Even the DVD may be hard to find. But it's certainly worth watching. It's a very good adaptation. And then they did the Children of Dune, right?
I just clicked on that with James McAvoy.
Yeah, and that's well worth watching, too.
All right, I'm going to have to check them out.
Now, did you recognize Javier Bardem as Stilgar?
It took like half the fucking movie before it dawned on me who that was, to be honest with you. You know? And yeah, I eventually figured it out. It's something just fired in my brain that told me that that's who it was.
I didn't know until the credits.
Wow. Okay.
Javier Bardem has a very distinct look and a very distinct hairstyle, let's face it.
Yes.
You know? And the fact that his face is covered up by the beard and he's wearing a wig disguises him so well. I mean, he could murder somebody in that disguise and get away with it.
Right? Right? Yeah, now he was good as Stilgar. I liked him in the role.
Yeah.
And I liked Christopher Walken as the Emperor. And people were like, oh, he doesn't have very many lines. And I'm like, that's probably not a bad thing, because then it would be very obvious that it was Christopher Walken, you know?
Yeah.
Aside from, like, how he looks. But imagine the Christopher Walken voice. Like, that's all you would notice.
Yeah. Imagine him playing the role as Jose Ferrer did in Lynch's Dune.
Right. You know? Right.
Well, and the thing is, Walken looked exceedingly frail in that movie. Aside from looking like the Crypt Keeper, you can't help how you look when you age. God knows, both of us know that.
Yeah, but listen, speak for yourself.
But he really did look very frail. No, I don't know if that maybe was an acting choice or the fact that he's just 80 something.
Yeah, maybe.
But when he knelt down to kiss Paul's ring, I'm like, oh man, they're going to have people help him up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I was actually surprised he was able to kneel, because every scene you saw him in before that, he was sitting down.
I can spell Christopher Walken. I'm curious how old he is. 80.
Or 80.
Right. Exactly 80. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I thought he was, I mean, it is what it is. He was good. Florence Pugh as the princess was good. It was a very well cast movie, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I saw an IMAX. So
yeah, I didn't pay the extra for IMAX, but I may go see it again in IMAX just to have that experience.
I might see it again. I mean, I have, my thing is I belong to the AMC A-list, so
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Like, I can see any movie in any format as part of it. So if I have the option to see a movie in IMAX, I will.
So, oh, absolutely.
And, you know, it's funny. Every time we don't have like a specific topic, I'm like, what are we going to talk about today? And yet here we are, we filled up an hour.
We certainly did.
No.
So. And we basically only talked about the things that we said we were going to talk about, which is unusual in and of itself, that neither one of us went off on tangents.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That shows just how much we dug Dune 2. We actually managed to talk about it for more than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad it's done so well. And I'm glad it's getting the critical acclaim that it deserves. I want to say it's going to be one of those movies that will get a shitload of Oscar nominations. But, you know, we both know what happens with movies that are released early in the year. They get forgotten by the end of it.
Exactly.
But I'm hoping that it does get a lot of technical awards, director awards, acting awards, because they're all deserved. One quick thing that I will take exception to is that there's CGI in one scene where Paul is walking up the rocks or the mountain as he's about to talk to those thousands and thousands of people in the valley below him. It really looked fake. I thought it really looked like there was some green screen and CGI going on there.
I don't remember that, but that doesn't mean anything. It might mean, yeah, that I was, you know, eating some popcorn during it. So I believe you. But I'll keep an eye out for it if I go see it again, because now, yeah, I'm curious.
Yeah. Do, and then let me know what you think.
All right.
So what have you got going on?
Again, not too much. Just working on some old script ideas that I had been banging around. As I record this, tomorrow I'll be heading down to the Garden State Film Festival for the day. There's an interesting panel about shooting movies here in New Jersey. And then our buddy Tom Ryan is hosting one of the horror film blocks later in the day. So I'll check that out. It's a pretty cool festival. And then Sunday, we record this is Friday. On Sunday, it's my daughter's 19th birthday, and I cannot fucking believe that.
Yeah, no kidding. She was only like 9.
Yeah,
when we started recording the show.
Yeah, I can. I cannot. I just cannot believe it.
Jesus, dude, you're old.
I know. I know. You know. So
wait till you become a grandpa.
Oh God, shut up. Shut up right now. But yeah, no, not much. Not much else. It was a very busy work week for me this week. So that's it. How about you, my friend?
All right. Well, I guess I have somewhat of an announcement. So I had given April 1st as the release date for The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow. And I'm going to have to push that back somewhat to April 22nd, I think, which is fine because that's actually, that would be my mother's 83rd birthday. But the issue that I'm having is formatting the file. Somewhere along the line, Amazon and Draft Digital, both the two platforms I publish on, changed something, because the way that I formatted this book is the same as I formatted everything else, and there's glitches, there's issues with it. Draft Digital isn't showing the indentations on it like it should, so it looks like it's all one block, and I don't like that because that's not how a book should look. And I'm having some issues trying to get that fixed, so I think I'm going to have to find somebody to format that for me. Back to Fiverr I go. So there's going to be a bit of a delay, but I'm hoping April 22nd will be the date. And with my work schedule, it's hard for me to work on it too much. Because I have time in the morning, but I don't really have a lot of time when I get home at night. Plus the fact I'm just too fucking tired to even think straight once I get home from work. So I think the best thing is just to find somebody to, format it for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry to hear about the delay, but.
Yeah, I am too, because I really want to get this thing out. I mean, I've got the ideas and the basis for the new book, Spectre Street, but I don't want to start working on it until this is finished. That's just one of my personal bugaboos. I don't like starting something when the last project still isn't out the door.
Right.
I don't multitask very well. I just can only concentrate on one thing at a time.
Right. Oh,
but aside from that, you can pick up my ebooks wherever ebooks are sold. You can pick up the physical copies at Amazon, and you can get the audiobooks at audible.com.
Awesome.
Yes. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.